Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Brew University Virtual Roundtable. Glad to have you here with us. My name is Jeff Weaver. I'm the training director and your host as we get ready for another exciting season out here on the pitch. I am excited to be talking about Ted Lasso today with a few of my friends, and you're here along for the ride as well. Glad to have you with us. So Ted Lasso will be our topic of the day. If you're not familiar with it, I can't wait to tell you a bit more about it because it is a fantastic show that you should have been watching last summer. But if you didn't watch it last summer, that's all right. We'll forgive you. You can catch up this summer because the second season is on its way soon. And we're going to talk about it before that even happens because there's some great leadership lessons. And that's the real key today is this is not just of a couple of fans nerding out on a podcast about a show they like together. No, we are actually going to talk about some of the leadership lessons, the Lasso way, if you will, is sort of the topic du jour. And to help me talk about it, I have brought my own group of Diamond Dogs with me. And so they are here to discuss this and break it all down, beginning with our CFO, Zach Cavanaugh. Zach, welcome. Glad to have you back.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Also joining us today, first time appearance on the Brew University podcast, first time at the round table, interning with me here in Jupiter for the summer is our very own Allie White. Allie White, welcome to the podcast, Allie. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. Glad you could be here with us. We're going to do a lot of references today too, folks. So if you haven't seen the show yet, get ready because those will be fun. All right. So we're going to do a little bit of a breakdown on Ted Lasso. We're going to talk a lot about the leadership lessons that can be found in this show. But before we get into that piece of it, I suppose we should explain for those who may be less familiar, or maybe you're just getting this in your podcast feed and you're like, what is this Ted Lasso thing they're talking about? Allow us to explain. Ted Lasso was the breakout hit of Apple TV Plus's streaming service last summer. What began as a bit comedy sketch by Jason Sudeikis and his writing partner Brad, who plays Coach Beard on the show. The two of them created this character, I guess, years ago and workshopped it and ran it around the Groundlings in LA and a few other places. And then when NBC Television in the U.S. acquired the rights to the Premier League, they needed a way to sort of bridge the gap between football, or soccer, as we Americans may call it, being on a major network. And so Sudeikis came forward and said, hey, you know, I've got this character we've been workshopping that Brad and I kind of came up with from his time back in England himself about this coach that knows nothing about European football and only knows American football, and we think it might be kind of funny. And so they started doing these little interstitials with the Premier League games, and that spun out into this entire show, which is what we watched here. It got optioned by Apple TV. It's produced by Warner Brothers. It's from the same creative minds that brought you Scrubs and Spin City and Cougar Town. So at the helm there is Bill Lawrence, who is famous for all of those shows and more, and they put together an entire series that started as a joke character about English football, and now here we are talking about it.
I didn't know any of that, Jeff.
I second that. Didn't know that.
Yeah, no, it was a bit. It was just a bit and a character that they had come up with, and they spun it out into this. But I think what's so great about it is, and there's a story famously that, you know, when Sudeikis had finished up a couple of movie projects and was talking with his wife about, well, what do you want to do next? She kept pointing out to him how much he loves this character. And was like, why don't you find a way to do something? Everybody has a streaming service now. Somebody must be desperate for content. And it turns out Apple was. And they were able to put this together. But it really is built around this character, Ted. And so we're going to talk about the show a little bit here at the beginning. No spoilers involved, and then I'll fire off a spoiler horn. And if you haven't seen the show, you can listen to this part without worrying about being spoiled. And if you haven't seen the show, what are you waiting for? But we'll give you a chance to pause and come back later. But at the broadest strokes, Ted Lasso is an American football coach. He's coached in it's unclear, but it's like high school varsity or junior, you know, Pop Warner or something. He's coached a team that is not even a professional team, took them from underdogs to champions in a single season, won the big deal, went viral with his team because of some locker room celebration videos. And as such, he has been recruited over to take on a football club, a fictional football club, Richmond, in the Premier League in England. And the story here is that the owner, the new owner of the Richmond club, is a jilted ex-wife who wants to ruin her husband's trophy club by hiring an American coach that knows nothing of football and seeing if he can tank the whole thing. And so from here, we find ourselves with the little bit of conflict this show has. But more importantly, we get to see Ted's coaching style and leadership style up close as he attempts to take a team that is sort of dysfunctional and a little bit of a ragtag group of misfits. And can he bring them up to the level of success, or will they end up relegated back to a lower league in the next season? Those are sort of the broad strokes, but Zach, Allie, would give me some thoughts on the plot and as it is, and sort of your broad thoughts on Ted Lasso.
So I suggested to Jeff a couple of weeks back, maybe a month or so back, and I now regret having made this suggestion, but I suggested to him that if he hadn't already watched Ted Lasso, that he should. And I had just finished the Great Manager Program boot camp at that point. And if you've participated in the boot camp, you know how fantastic it is and the great job that Jeff does. And one of the things he does really well is he brings in external content, be that videos or the like, to sort of liven things up. So my suggestion was he should look at Ted Lasso because I thought there were great leadership lessons in there which apply very directly to the leadership style that we teach as part of the Great Manager Program, and specifically some of the books that we have used over the years as sort of content and structure for that program. Lencioni's Five Dysfunctions, primarily, and I think secondarily, First Break All the Rules. Anyhow, I got a response from Jeff the next morning, which said, yes, he had. He thought it was wonderful, but rather than him pulling content from it to include in the Great Manager Program, he suggested that we turn it into a podcast and that we sit down and discuss some of those leadership principles and lessons. So here we are today, and I now know that I will never recommend something like this to Jeff again.
I mean, if this isn't the perfect use of the podcast, right? Because where else would we talk about this? This is not something that I'm going to build an entire class out of a show. And, you know, a season from now, it's going to be one season irrelevant. And 3 seasons from now, it might be 3 seasons irrelevant. But the podcast is such a perfect use for this. And I thought, what a great opportunity to take something like this that's in the mindset, that's in the pop culture that people are talking about, and see how we can apply it here. And then I roped Allie into this because she's interning for me this summer and she didn't have a choice. So Allie, how did you feel about Ted Lasso? You came into this completely cold. You had not seen the show or even heard of it.
That is correct. I saw the email about Ted Lasso and yep, I got assigned to watch it and I jumped right on it and became an overnight super fan. I absolutely love it. It is so hard not to root for Ted Lasso.
You're Richmond till you die now, right?
Absolutely. I got to learn that song.
Also, Jeff, on a personal note, you know that I spent 6 years living overseas in London, not far from Richmond, and they shoot a whole bunch of scenes with them on sort of the Richmond Common or the Richmond Green, and they have not changed anything. All of those pubs are the actual pubs. There's one that's regularly in the background called the Cricketers, and I spent many, many Sunday afternoons after a long walk in Richmond Park hanging out inside or outside the Cricketers, depending on time of year, drinking a number of local pints.
There you go. So yeah, no, this is fun. This show. I think this show, you know, going into it, everybody was a little weirded out by the idea that, hey, you know, again, this is a sketch comedy bit about soccer that nobody really watches on NBC anyway. And where is this coming from? But at the heart of it is this character, Ted Lasso, who is, you know, relentlessly optimistic and has this great coaching style. And as I went back and rewatched everything over the weekend to pull my notes together, I was continually amazed that once I started looking for it, you can see all the leadership lessons we teach about, you know, how to run a functional team, not a dysfunctional team, and how to build trust and all the things that he does that we'll break down more deeply here in a few minutes. It's all there for you inside the wrapper of this delightful, wholesome, heartfelt show that I think hits for me a place where, you know, so much of comedy, so much of TV lately seems to want to be harsh. It wants to be sarcastic. It wants to find its humor in cutting others down, or it wants to find its humor by putting somebody or something in the butt of the joke situation. And this is a show that manages to treat every character with a tremendous amount of humanity. There are no villains. There are people with conflict and people with problems and people with their own things to overcome. And in the course of the show, we not only get to watch them do that, we get to root for them to do that. By the end of this show, every character is a character we like. Even the characters we're supposed to be in conflict with or that we're supposed to not like. We like them by the end because we're watching them take their journey and we're watching them change. And, you know, I say often, I wouldn't do the job I do if I didn't think people could fundamentally change, right? Because otherwise it's a waste of time. Why bother teaching and training and educating and guiding and coaching if you don't believe that? And I think what I love about this show is that Ted embodies that so deeply that he believes people can change. Otherwise, why be a coach? And he loves being a coach. He says at one point, you know, that this is the greatest job in the world. It's what he was born to do. And it's because he loves to see people become better versions of themselves. And we get to see that when we watch this, and we get to see that through it. And we get to take the lessons away there from it, which I think makes it great. So I hope we're selling you on this show. If you haven't seen it yet, you should definitely, you know, I think they'll give away a subscription to a streaming service pretty much to anybody these days. So I don't even know what you'd need. But if you check out Apple TV Plus, if you've bought an Apple device in the last year, you probably already have it and didn't even realize you had it and probably didn't think there was anything worth catching until you found out that there's this really delightful little 10 episodes, 5 hours. It's a short watch. You can get through it in a weekend, as Allie proved. But more importantly, it's a really wholesome, really fun watch. And in a year where it's, you know, it's been a rough year for watching news or watching anything real, this has been just a great little bit of escapism into something where everybody is kind and ultimately fundamentally good. And even if they're dealing with their own stuff, you know, we find out that by the end of this, they're all good people just trying their best to do their best in the world, which is kind of a fun and light and refreshing thing to watch as well.
Yeah, I can report, Jeff, that over the past, call it 12 months, my wife and I have probably started a dozen, maybe 15 new series. And I'm not sure we've ever made it past episode 3, except for this one. And, you know, a lot of television these days, I think, comes loaded with anxiety. And this is a really easy show to sort of kick your feet up and just enjoy. We were talking before we kicked off the podcast, and we were debating whether, you know, wholesome was the right word. And I think we all generally agree that it probably is. It's a wholesome show, and it's really a pleasure to watch.
All right. Well, with that, I think if you haven't been convinced by now to watch this one, then I don't think we can convince you any further. So with that, we're going to, as they say, fire off the spoiler horn. From this point forward, we will be talking about Ted Lasso in its entirety. We may give away some stuff that if you have not seen the show yet, you might have wanted to wait to hear, but we will be breaking it down at a much deeper level so we can really talk about the leadership lessons within it. So this is your last chance, last call. If you haven't watched Ted Lasso yet, press pause, go get yourself on Apple TV Plus, watch a few episodes at least, and then come back and see what you think. So we will cross over into spoiler territory here for Ted Lasso. So all bets are off now. Now we can really talk about the Lasso way in its entirety. So I will open the floor to my two guests here this morning and ask my first question, which is, what were some of the first things that struck you from Ted's leadership style? And maybe, Zach, I know, again, you sort of kicked this idea off by pinging me one night on Teams going, we should be talking about this. What were the moments that made you go, this is what we should be talking about, and the stuff that really maybe jumped out at you as that's a great example of the kind of leadership we would want?
I guess there were a couple of moments that really stood out. But when I stepped back and thought about it, and then when I began sort of rewatching some of these episodes to prep for today, it became clear that although there were a few standout moments, every, I don't know, call it 5 or so minutes, there is a leadership lesson of sorts that you can take away. And Jeff and I were chatting before that, you know, we both only got through a couple of episodes before the number of notes that we scribbled down kind of became overwhelming, and we just sort of had to take a step back. But I think what led me to reach out to you was sort of a quote at the end of the last episode, episode 10. And I think Ted is talking to his son, and his son essentially asks why he's standing on the sidelines not doing anything, right? And Ted responds with something along the lines of, this isn't like American football. Once the match starts, I can't tell my players to do anything. I have to rely on the fact that I have trained them well, that they know the overall objective, and that they're going to figure out working together as a team how to get there. And that to me clicked is sort of a perfect example of first break all the rules and sort of the underlying strategy there. And then when I thought back, there were just loads and loads and loads of other examples. And I know we're going to dive into a number of those in detail, but it was that quote that I think really sort of tipped me over the edge.
I completely agree. And I do love that final moments of the final game where, yeah, you know, Ted is really the whole series is leading towards this. It's both dramatically the big conclusion to what we've been watching them as they've progressed throughout their season. But it's also the culmination of Ted's coaching style, which we've seen from the beginning and we see throughout. And yet it is very much, it's that light touch delegation style that we love of, I've given them their objective. I've given them all the tools. I know I've given them every opportunity to succeed, but now I have to sit back and see if it happens or not. And as a leader, there's really no more influence I have left. They have to go out there and do it, which for the kind of work we do is so poignant because that is exactly how our managers lead most of the time. You know, most of our folks do not see their people on a day-to-day basis. It's certainly not all the time because they're out in the trade. They're running independently. If you have merchandisers or drivers or sales reps, even in the warehouse, you can't be in all places at once. You have to trust that you have built this team with the right set of objectives, the first choice way, the six-pack service standards, the trusted beer advisor. It's all there. I've given them every tool that I can. Now I have to just sit back and see what happens and hope that it all kicks in and that it all worked out and that they've absorbed it all enough. And that as a manager is probably one of the scariest parts of being a manager is that moment of let go and see did all these things that I did work out and hopefully they did, but you're not going to find out until you see and you know, measuring your success in that is difficult because you can't always measure your success at those things by the outcome of the game as it were.
And I think outcome is the right word there, right? I think first break all the rules would teach us that employees should be guided by outcomes and not steps. You know, we as managers, as you say, we can't be there all the time, nor should we. And our employees have talents, they have skills, they have experiences that we would never have. And you can't be successful by laying out in detail steps that individuals or teams should follow. You need to give them the big picture and then give them the skills and the experience that they need, and then allow them to figure out the best way for them and their teams to get the job done.
Exactly right. It's that being the compass piece that we talk about so much in Great Manager is have you laid down the compass? Do they know what the true north is? And let them figure out the map and the details that go along with it. Very cool. Allie, you're new to the party, but let's find out. What were some big moments in Ted Lasso that jumped out at you as leadership lessons?
I think the first thing that jumped out at me was in the first episode when Ted Lasso came in with the suggestion box, which when that first happened, I was like, oh, dumb idea, man. Like, I was like, you're going to get eaten alive. And one of the suggestions was the shower, the water pressure is awful. And the guys came in the next day and the water pressure was fixed. And it seemed like something so small, but I thought it was so important because leaders and managers oftentimes want to make a big impact and they look for big solutions, but really for individual employees, the experience is in the little things that maybe a manager wouldn't see. And so even though Ted Lasso is probably not going to be in those showers, after a long day of practice, those showers are important for those guys. That's their reset period. And nobody had cared about it before, but now their experience went from, you know, being down here and just a few notches up.
So I had this in my notes and I absolutely loved it because I couldn't agree with you more, Allie. It's such a perfect example of what we try to teach our managers to do here. So again, if you haven't seen it, this is early on in the show. Ted creates a suggestion box for, again, this is a group of professional footballers. These are, you know, grown men who are pretty rough and tumble out on the field. And he comes in with a suggestion box, which he has decorated by the team's kit manager's niece, I believe. So it's got sparkles and bunny ears and all this stuff on it and it looks ridiculous. And he has to know that these guys are going to, you know, tell him to shove it up his arse when he puts this box out there. And they do, right? I mean, I think every suggestion in the box except for one is pretty much, you know, quit, kill yourself, go home. We don't want you here, all that stuff. But Ted knew that in the midst of all that noise, he might actually get one real thing that he could work on. And he did. The shower pressure, the water pressure in the showers sucks. And so Ted gets it fixed. And it's the perfect example of one of our biggest core values, which is we are an employer that listens and cares. He gave them a way to present feedback to him. And when he got that feedback, he took action on it. And that little thing, like you say, it seems like a little thing and it's never even going to affect him personally as a manager, but it meant something to his guys. And it does two things. One is it shows that the details matter to him. And two is it sets the tone that if you give me real feedback, I will do real things with it. And it becomes the turning point for, of course, we come to figure out that it's actually Roy, one of the veterans on the team that probably put this suggestion in there along with a different suggestion that he did sign that said, you know, Ted quit. But he doesn't sign this one. He just puts it in, but he's thrilled. And it's a big step in Roy's development as a leader amongst his team is it builds trust, right? This is a trust building moment. I asked for something. It meant something to me, even if it didn't mean much to you, but I asked you, listen, you took action on what I wanted. It became the foundation of speaking up here means something. If we give feedback, it's going to be received. There's going to be changes. That first step sets off a lot of Roy's journey as a character to becoming a leader and giving Ted the opportunity to be trusted by him because I asked, he delivered. And that's one of those things that as managers, are we doing enough of it? Do we have our own purple sparkly bunny box? Maybe, maybe not. But what we need to be doing is we need to be listening to our teams and when they tell us things, taking action. We are an employer that listens and cares. And Ted is a coach who listens and cares. And it sets the tone for how he's going to manage that club going forward. Because the word got out. The word got out that, you know, when we ask for things, we're going to get them. So now all of a sudden it becomes a safe space to ask for that stuff.
That was perfect. I can't add much to that, Jeff. The corollary to this one is we as managers have to be very careful asking for suggestions and input if we're not going to take action on them, right? And action doesn't mean that, you know, if your team members come to you and say everyone should have a 50% salary increase, like, probably not going to work. But a response of some kind is necessary to suggestions, even if the response is we've heard you, we understand where you're coming from. It's not possible at this time, and we move on. But as you say, probably more importantly is finding those opportunities to show people that we do listen, that we do value their input, and taking corrective action to improve. And as Ali said, making their experience as employees, or in this case as players, a little better.
Absolutely. Yeah, 90% of the feedback was you should quit. He didn't listen to that one. But there was one thing, and that one thing opened the door to a lot more to come. So I loved that moment, Ali. I think it's a great call out. It was one of those things that really struck me early on about the lasso way, as it became known in the show, that when Ted asks for feedback, he's not kidding. He wants to hear from you, and he's going to take action on it. And that is something we know that is consistently there with our best managers. They are constantly asking their teams or giving their team a way to be heard. And when their team speaks up, they do something with that. Even if it is seemingly insignificant, it can have a huge impact on the way people perceive their leader. So great example. All right, I've got one that I want to talk about because it's fun, but also because I think there's a great lesson in it. So Ted begins a thing he calls biscuits with the boss. And Ted's biscuits become a running gag throughout the show. But on Monday morning, as the club is out doing their first practice, Ted shows up in his new owner's office with some biscuits that he has brought along with him. We know not where they came from or how they are made, but nonetheless, they are these delicious and biscuits, by the way, cookies for my American friends. I'm going full British today. So he brings cookies and they're delicious, and he uses them to begin what he calls biscuits with the boss. And this is his time that he's going to come in every morning with these cookies to his new boss, Rebecca. And the first thing he asks Rebecca, this is great, brings her cookies, sets them on the table. First thing he says to her is, okay, first concert, worst concert, go. Spice Girls was the answer, by the way. And, you know, hilarity ensues. But here's what I love about biscuits with the boss. Two things. One is, Ted immediately shows us something that we teach in Great Manager, especially in the context of Five Dysfunctions all the time, which is the importance of building trust. And asking just simple questions like first concert, worst concert is just in line with the way we do what we call like our Me on a Page or any other type of team building event where I always encourage managers, start with simple, seemingly innocuous questions that allow people to open up in a safer space. They can tell you something that's personal, but not necessarily private or emotionally, you know, vulnerable. And then use that to start building and finding common ground. And so Ted does this textbook, right? He walks in, he's got a simple icebreaker question, he's got his answer ready, he wants to hear hers, he's genuinely interested in what she has to say, and that is for him the beginnings of we're going to build trust together. And you see him do this repeatedly with people throughout the show where he's got these simple little ways to begin a conversation with them, and he always starts small and he lets it build up, but he's always looking for common ground and he's always looking for trust. The same thing comes back around at a night where they're doing a gala event and two of his star players who have been in constant conflict with each other, he has them both sat at the table with him. And the first thing he says to him is, you guys have to find some common ground, because we know how important common ground is to building trust. And Ted gets it as well. And Biscuits with the Boss is his attempt at trying to build that. It's also a great example of the importance of a regular meeting with someone that you work with regularly, or in this case, report to, right? So Ted sets the tone. He doesn't even wait for his boss to say, hey, I want to meet with you once a week. He's like, no, we're going to meet every morning at 7 a.m. I'm going to bring you a couple of biscuits, and we're going to, if nothing else, we're just going to talk about our day and the weather and what's on the agenda, but I'm going to make sure we have a constant point of contact. And even when she says she doesn't have time for it, Ted will not relent. It's, I am going to be here tomorrow at 7 and the day after and the day after, and I'm going to build this routine come hell or high water. But again, when it comes to things that we teach here, you know, how many times with Death by Meeting have we talked about the importance of regular meetings, especially with the people that work for you and the people you work for? Ted sees it, he executes on it, and over time, Biscuits with the Boss breaks Rebecca's walls down, opens up a relationship for them, and creates that constant ability for them to chat. So I want to get you guys' thoughts on Biscuits with the Boss, because I thought, in addition to being a clever title and probably the name of my next podcast, Biscuits with the Boss seems like a great way to build rapport, but more importantly, keep the lines of communication open.
Well, before we go any farther, I think we need to answer the question. First concert, worst concert?
Oh, that is a good question. Let's do that. I want to put Allie on the spot for this one. So Allie, first concert, best concert.
Is it best or worst?
I think it is actually best. Yeah, I'm probably saying it wrong, but I think it's first and best.
Okay. First concert was Hillary Duff.
And I'm old.
I think I went and I was like 10 years old or something, and I screamed my head off, and it was one of the greatest things ever. Best concert would be Andrea Bocelli.
All right, good picks. Zach?
First concert, Dave Matthews Band with my father when I was 11 at the Tweeter Center for Performing Arts in Western Massachusetts. Best concert was the Rolling Stones in East London about 2.5 years ago, sort of back where at least one of them had grown up. And they were old. They are old. But the energy and enthusiasm of sort of the local crowd and those guys playing sort of on their home stage was incredible.
Very nice. Very good concerts. Let's see. First concert. First concert was Billy Joel, Elton John. The original face-to-face tour, the last stop of the first. Yeah, I know. That's how old I am. Billy Joel, Elton John, the last stop on the first face-to-face tour was Orlando. It was a one-hour rain delay. We were all standing under the stadium bleachers waiting for the rain to clear, and it finally did. And they came out on stage, and they both apologized for the delay and said, neither one of us has anything going on for the next 6 weeks, so we're just going to sing until we can't sing anymore. And they did. They went almost 4 hours. They did like an hour and a half each solo, and then did an hour, almost an hour and a half together. It was absolutely, absolutely killer. And I loved every minute of it. And that was my first concert. I would say best concert, tougher. That one is obviously way up there, but I will say in the Dave Matthews realm, and I've been a Dave Matthews fan for a long time as well. I'm going to lump three concerts into one. So my friend Steve and I, who were best friends and Dave Matthews fans growing up, we went and caught them Orlando, Tampa, and West Palm 1, 2, 3 days in a row, basically. And so if you just, in my head, those are three concerts all mashed into one. Vertical Horizon opened for the entire set. I could not tell you what they played at what, but it was one of those years where they didn't have an album, so they played whatever they want. It was fantastic. So there's your trivia of the day, first and best concerts. But yeah, it's, you know, Biscuits with the Boss. What a great way to bridge dialogue and open up people to conversation.
I was just going to say, I had Biscuits with the Boss in my notes as well, because at first it was, again, one of those things where I was like, oh, Ted, she does not want you around, man. I know you're going to be relentless, but I can't tell you if this is going to get better. And like you said, he's relentless and relentlessly optimistic and friendly and just pure-hearted and very motivated. He totally broke her down, and they built such a strong relationship from that, even though there were bumps, a big bump in the road. It just showed me how important communicating is and fitting people into your daily routine every day. Just even if it, you don't have something on the agenda to talk about, making sure that you make time to talk to people. And I also saw an example of that when Jeff and I went on our trip to the Fort Myers office. We spent time just going around and talking to people, and he just was checking in and making time to communicate and build those relationships with people that he doesn't get to see all the time. At first, I was like, okay, we're going around just saying hi. And by the end, I feel like I learned a lot, because there were people that you hadn't spoken to in a while, and they wanted to talk, wanted to catch up, and there were ways that you guys could help each other work-wise. And it was really cool. And I think that's what Ted does just on a daily basis.
He makes face-to-face communication a priority, which is, again, right inside our leadership competencies when it comes to communicating effectively. We want to make face-to-face communication a priority. Ted does that. We never really see him texting his people. We never see him really making a phone call. It's always, and of course it's...
Except when he's calling the Diamond Dogs.
Except when he's calling the Diamond Dogs. But that's only to get them there in person. It's more like the bat signal, really. But yeah, it's he makes face-to-face communication a priority, and he understands the power of that. So,
and I actually think I've been impressed in my short time at J.D. Taylor. I've been impressed walking around any one of the facilities with really any manager, any leader, at the amount of time that everyone takes to get out there and say hello and ask questions. It's nothing I've seen at other companies before. So I think that we live that value, and it's critically important. Now the I think there's a balance here, right? Now if I started walking into John Taylor's office every morning with a plate full of cookies, I'm not sure how long I would last at J.J. Taylor. I think within my own team, we do at least weekly one-on-ones with direct reports. And to me, that's the right balance. It doesn't mean you're not spending time together nearly every day. Some weeks you are, some weeks you probably aren't. But having that sort of sacred 30 minutes on the calendar that maybe you need it and there are important topics to talk through, and maybe you don't, and you're just going to kind of shoot the breeze. But that has always worked for me. Other teams may need more frequency or less. But something with directs at least 30 minutes a week, I think, is about spot on.
Absolutely. And to me, the key is the regularity and the willingness to have that regardless of whether there's something on the agenda or not, even taking advantage of the time just as a catch-up. It's the habit. It's the making sure that it never goes away. And that, to me, is what is so powerful about it, because ultimately meetings like that become a placeholder for the stuff that you don't want to have to deal with throughout the week. When I know I've got that time every Monday morning, I don't have to worry about that thing on Thursday afternoon that's important but not urgent. I can calendar it for later. And if you're the kind of manager that finds yourself constantly in the firefight, constantly getting phone calls from your people about every little thing that comes across their mind, it's probably because they don't have a better place to put those things. So having regular meetings is a great container for the stuff that is important but not always urgent, that they know they can bring it up and they can therefore not have to interrupt your day every day with it. It has its own place at one time a week. I do want to take a minute. I got a couple of good answers in the chat. So VP of Finance, Stu Shapiro, first concert, Carole King, and his best concert was Yes. Again, so much like Allie, two ends of the spectrum, and yet I think both great answers. And our HR director in Tampa, Suzanne Borgia, first concert, New Kids on the Block. Yeah, and best concert, front row for Elton John, Billy Joel, Dueling Piano Tour, or possibly Cher. She's undecided. I would be undecided too, because those are both powerhouse shows. So, toss-ups are allowed. We're not going to put you into a box here and say it has to be one. So thank you guys for answering that stuff. Always fun to hear what you guys have to say as well. There's another thing that Ted does that I want to key in on. It happens right from the beginning of the show, and I think it's really important because I see it work well for so many good managers, but it's something that a lot of managers struggle with, and that is the power of names. Ted knows everybody's name. He knows the name of the driver that picks him up at the airport. He knows, and by the time they're done with the drive, he knows enough about him to know where his family's restaurant is that he will take someone back to at a later time. He immediately, of course, wants to know the name of their kit manager, Nathan, or Nate. And we see in several moments the power that that has, because nobody has bothered to learn Nate's name. Nobody uses Nate's name. The fact that the new gaffer, the new manager of this team, is not only knows it, but says it to him regularly, becomes this like weight off the shoulders, empowering moment for Nate. And it's a big part of his character journey. Ted knows everybody's name. He knows the name of every reporter in the room by the time the season is done. He uses people's names constantly and to great effect. It's almost like a superpower, but it's one of those superpowers that's so easily attainable by anyone who puts in the effort. And it's a great example throughout the show. So I wanted to see what you guys thought about the power of using names.
I you can't argue with it. It's, you know, if you think about times when you were referred to by your own name, be that by a peer that you didn't think you knew that well, or someone you see as more senior than you, it is meaningful. And you think, wow, that person actually listened. They actually connected when we first spoke and they remembered who I was. And there's tons of value in that, and it shows a certain amount of respect. I'll be honest, I have struggled with this for years, and it's something that I consciously work on regularly, and I'm nowhere near where I want to be. And everyone has their own way of trying to do it. When I walk away from a conversation, you know, hopefully I have the person's contact information. If not, I try and create a contact. And then I try and jot down a couple of things that I learned about them during that conversation into the notes section of contacts, right? If I picked up their spouse's name or their kids' names or where they went to school or where they grew up, those little things, if I write them down, then the next time I know I'm going to see that individual, I can look back and pick up some of those things. And hopefully it's a sign of respect to them that I learned and intend to build from whatever those little tidbits of information were that I picked up in those early conversations. My personal view is you can't do it all. You can't keep it all in your head, but you can cheat a little bit, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, going off that specifically, a manager that I have worked under in the past was incredible with names, and I had no idea how in the world that was even possible, because I am also not great with names. And I think it was a couple months in, and she had asked me to go grab something from her desk drawer, and I opened her drawer, and there is a tattered old notebook, and I picked up the notebook to move it, and it fell open, and it's just full of people's names, where they're from, family, any random little note from conversations. And this thing was like years old, and the pages in the back were fresh. I mean, she was still writing in it. And I asked her about it, and she was like, you know, even if I'm not sure I'm going to see these people again, like, there is a power in using names. And when somebody speaks your name, one, yes, it's meaningful. Also, it releases endorphins. It makes people feel good. And you remember when somebody says your name. And you also remember when you can tell somebody has forgotten your name. So, which I'm sure has happened to everybody a lot. And as an intern, as a student, that's always something that I remember and that is important to me. If I, you know, meet somebody quickly and introduce myself, and I think that nobody makes a note of it, at the end of the conversation, they're like, oh, bye, Allie. It was nice meeting you. I'm like, oh, nice. Okay. That made me feel good. This person now, you know, and I make a note of that person equally, and that's just jotted down in my memory.
Yeah, there's such a tremendous power to it. And I always, you know, I watched this part and I immediately thought of how often, every time we do Great Manager, one of the things that comes up is this, the power of using names. Because we have a great example of it ourselves, our own Ted Lasso. Jay Martin does this better than anyone I've known. I mean, Jay knows everybody's name. I am not great at it. I'm constantly trying to get better. when I watch Jay walk through the warehouse and he knows everybody's name, you can see what it does to their day, what it does to their mood, to just know that they're seen and recognized and included, and they feel like they're part of belonging because somebody knows who they are. And Ted is just such a great example of this. And I, like I said, it's fun to watch right from the beginning of episode one is, you know, as soon as he meets their driver, there's nobody unimportant to Ted Lasso. And I think that's another great quality that leaders and great managers have is no one in his world is unimportant. Even just the guy who's there just to pick you up and take you from the airport to the pitch, doesn't matter. That guy's important. And in the time that you are with Ted, you are the most important thing in his day. You are what he's focused on. When he spends a day with a reporter, you know, he spends the time to know and get to know that reporter better. He's familiar with him and he treats him like a friend. And everybody in Ted's world is someone he considers a friend, someone he considers important. And I think that's a great leadership lesson is that there's no one we don't deserve to give our time to, especially when they're right in front of us. What else? What other stuff stuck out? What was your aha Lasso way moments?
I've got a bunch, but one that I think it's worth spending a couple minutes talking about is somewhere in the middle of episode two. I think Ted is... he's struggling to find a way to connect with his all-star, with Jamie. And he goes to seek the advice of Jamie's girlfriend. And I think the question he asks is, what motivates Jamie? And her initial response, I don't think we can say on a J.J. Taylor podcast.
It was the unique response that only a girlfriend could provide, folks. That's what we'll tell you.
There you go. But she follows up and says he responds well to positive reinforcement. And I think to an extent, we all do. And as leaders, you can never underestimate the power of positive reinforcement. There's an old adage, praise in public and criticize or coach in private. I'm not sure I fully subscribe to the second half of that. I think if you have a team which is built in trust, there's an element of public constructive criticism amongst teams, which is valuable. But more importantly, praise in public. It's another thing that I think Jay Martin excels at. You will see him, I think, in almost every meeting take an opportunity to praise the efforts and the work of one or more individuals. And it goes a long way, again, towards sort of the recognition that you are respected and valued for the work that you put in, and it's not going unnoticed.
Yeah, I love this whole segment, and I think you're right. This is, I believe, episode two. But there's a few things in the way that Ted deals with Jamie. And so Jamie is a superstar player on the team, has thusly achieved a little too much ego for himself. He sees himself as almost above and separate from the team. He is the star, and the team is his background, you know, supporting cast in his mind. And Ted, of course, is you know, determined to try and make him a full part of the team in order for this team to be able to succeed. And there's a couple of things about the way he approaches it that I think are worth pointing out. One is he starts by going to Rebecca, the owner of the club, and saying, you know this guy better than I do. What can I do about him? And I love that because, first of all, it's a way, Ted is intentional about engaging others, and there's a humility in it. He's not afraid to ask for help. He's not afraid to say, yeah, I'm the coach. You've brought me in. And where some people might have been like, I better figure this out. This is the job I was hired to do. There's no ego in Ted. He's totally willing to go right ahead and say, I'm not the smartest person on this guy. I don't know him well. Help me. I'm trying to accomplish a goal. And any help I can get in achieving the means to that end, I will take it. So he goes to Rebecca, and Rebecca says, she doesn't know him very well, which is part of understanding her character flaws. But she points him at Jamie's girlfriend, Keely, and he speaks to Keely. And again, the same thing. He's not afraid to ask for help. He's also looking for, and he understands human nature and motivation well enough to say, I've got to figure out what makes Jamie tick. I've got to figure out what makes this person work. And how many times have we talked about in recognition training, and how to creative recognition for teams, the importance of making sure that people are recognized in the way they want to be recognized. That recognition has to be personal, has to be meaningful to the individual. So finding out what it is that makes him tick, what it is that motivates him, and adapting his style to that. He's like, oh, positive reinforcement, I'm the king of that. I can make that work. But you go, you get the sense right away that no matter what the answer was, Ted was going to find a way to adapt to it. And then when he actually uses that technique later in the episode, he does sort of the classic feedback sandwich, as we say in the leadership realm, which is, and Allie's nodding her head. Allie, you know the feedback sandwich? Tell us all what.
A positive, a praise, a little constructive criticism, followed by praise.
You got it. That's exactly it, right? So he begins by affirming the person, right? So he starts by affirming Jamie. Jamie, you're probably the best player I've ever seen. You might be one of the most naturally gifted athletes I've ever seen. Then he corrects just the behavior. He focuses in with specific on what Jamie has to do differently in order to be successful. If you could just figure out how to channel that into being a team player instead of an individual, you'd probably be the best there ever was beyond any shadow of a doubt. So yes, he's playing to Jamie's ego. And yes, he's playing to what Jamie wants, which is that positive reinforcement, but it's not manipulative. It's not done in some way to trick Jamie into getting what he wants. It's the purest form of feedback. Here's what's good about you. Here's the one thing that you need to fix. And here's what I think could be if you would take the time to do it. And then he backs off and lets Jamie make his decision for himself. And over the next few episodes, you know, we'll see that Jamie ends up coming around and choosing to be part of the team. But at every step in that process, Ted makes it a choice. It's always left to Jamie. You're going to engage if you choose to engage. You won't deter this team. And there are some great moments where Ted confronts Jamie very quickly and very real time and very authoritatively. Like, you're not going to deter this team. You're not going to take us off our mission. I'm not going to let you do something to harm us. But whether or not you choose to participate with us, that's on you. And it is a great, great case study in how you deal with that kind of problem performer, that ego-driven, I'm bigger than the mission, I'm bigger than the rest of the group, I'm too big for myself type personality. Ted really reins it in a beautiful way.
I have a question for you guys. What did you think about, and this is not a subtle lesson that's very obvious, and they say it, you know, they make a big point of it at the end, but what did you think about the be a goldfish?
Oh, be a goldfish. Good question. Zach, you got thoughts on be a goldfish?
I do. I heard this before. I think it's fantastic advice. I think it's advice that I need to take sometimes. I think we probably all do. But if you boil it down, right, what's the lesson he's trying to teach is, yeah, when something goes wrong, you need to learn from it. You don't want to make the same mistake twice. But learn from it and get over it. Move on. Because if you dwell on it, it's only going to hold you back. And we've all got to learn that both in a professional environment and I think in a personal environment, right? Learn from your mistakes, but then put them firmly in the rear view and don't let them sort of hang on.
Yeah, so the moment that Allie is referring to is one of the strikers on the side there, Sam, blows a big play, tumbles himself over and missed an opportunity. And Ted can immediately recognize that Sam's getting frustrated by this, and he pulls him over to the sideline and he says, you know who the happiest animal is? A goldfish, because it has a 10-second memory. Just be a goldfish, Sam. And the point is exactly that. Zach nailed it, right? That it's let go of the mistakes. Don't hold on to your failures. Don't let them dwell. My take on it is that is a great lesson that we should all strive to, you know, we should all strive to learn from and adapt and be part of ourselves. The pedantic in me hates this one because it's not true. Goldfish have fantastic memories. And if you are a longtime fan of Mythbusters like I am, season 1, episode 11, you know that goldfish can be taught things and 30 days later still run a maze or kick a soccer goal or anything like that. So goldfish have good memories, but the lesson is still well taken. So that the concept is there. So the pedantic in me goes, but a goldfish doesn't have a 10-second memory. That's a myth. But the reality in me knows that, yes, the point of don't hold on to the mistakes, let things go, and just move forward is absolutely poignant. So I like, Zach, what you said, that we should both learn from our mistakes and let go of them. And I think that's probably more accurate to what a goldfish really does, because you can teach a goldfish. They do have a memory. But they do, you know, hopefully it's short. And the idea, of course, is, you know, let go of the stuff that is limiting you today and don't hold on to the small mistakes that you make. It is a fun moment and a great quote as well.
I learned quite a bit spending a Monday morning with Jeff. like a Snapple bottle.
It's, you know, yeah, exactly. It's podcast plus Snapple facts all in one. The show is full of great quotes, and I want to hit on a couple of them here as we get towards the end of our time, because I think some of them are definitely worth visiting. One is Ted makes the comment, "The harder you work, the luckier you get," which is a quote that I absolutely have always sort of loved. It's an adaptation of a quote that I love by Hank Haney that says, "Success is when opportunity meets preparation." But here, you know, what Ted is really saying, the harder you work, the luckier you get, is, you know, people who put themselves in the way of opportunities, who are focused on things, who have vision and are practicing and striving and achieving, they're opening themselves up to success in big ways. And it sort of folds along too, you know, when Ted first moves into his office, we see a short montage of Ted decorating his office, and it's a great moment because he puts up pictures of victory everywhere, right? He's got Muhammad Ali, he's got the Miracle on Ice, he's got, in a great little Easter egg, he has Swanson's Pyramid of Greatness from Parks and Rec. I don't know if anybody else caught that, but I love it. He's got all this stuff around him that is motivational, and he puts the Believe poster over the door to his office. Ted's a visualizer, but he understands the power in focused energy and attention. And there's a lot of truth to this. There's some great research and science behind, you get what you focus on. You get what you're aiming at. And if you're focused on failure, or if you're focused on coming up short, if you're constantly thinking about, am I going to get what I need to achieve this month? Am I going to make my numbers? Or am I going to be short? You're more likely to come up short versus someone who just focuses in on the success of, I'm going to make it, and I'm just going to find a way. And he bathes himself in success and creates this energy. And a lot of people would say, oh, it's rose-colored glasses, Ted's an internal optimist, positive aura. But I think there's more to it than that. I think it's Ted understands the importance of, the harder you work, the luckier you get. If you focus on success, you breed success one way or another, because you just have convinced yourself of it to the point where you won't let it go. And I really love those little moments that sort of bring us into Ted's mindset, and that what he brings to the team is a renewed focus and a renewed energy around success. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think, and we've already said, Ted's superpower is his optimism. And I think when, especially in the workplace, when there's a deadline or we fall under some kind of stress, it's very easy to be like, how am I going to do this? And stress about your hows and all that you have to do, and am I going to get there? Is this going to happen? How in the world are we going to make this work? And Ted's first thought is, we're doing it. That's final. That's not a question. We just have to figure out, you know, put some puzzle pieces together, but it's there. And he fully believes in himself and his team. And in the workplace, and especially here, I've seen everybody believes in each other, and everybody knows each other's capability, and people work hard. And when you're surrounded by people that work hard, you want to help each other out, and it's belief comes naturally. And that's how it is for Ted. He never questions anybody, a single member of the team. He's like, you're here for a reason. And if you're here, you can do it.
Yeah. There are moments when other characters, and I think viewers, become frustrated with Ted because he's the eternal optimist. And there are moments when it drives me crazy. I just want him to be mad or angry, upset, or a bit of a pessimist, and it never happens. But it's critical as the season evolves to his leadership style that he is the eternal optimist. And he has his sort of moments of frustration internally, I think, but outwardly to his team and to his coaches, he always believes. I guess you create your own luck is another way to look at that. And I believe that firmly. I think that intelligence, skill, experience, all of those things can be replaced. Hard work, the person who works the hardest can almost always get ahead. They can almost always be victorious.
Absolutely. And he does such a great job. We could go on for hours on this stuff, but you know, he does such a great job of making everybody feel a part of the team at all times. You know, if you're part of the club, you're part of the club. There are no silos in Ted Lasso's world, whether you're the equipment manager, the manager of the club, You know, everybody's allowed to contribute at any level. He takes feedback from everybody. He listens to everybody. You know, Nate, the kit manager, ends up becoming an assistant manager coach to the team because Ted is constantly asking him for feedback and listening and doing things with it and giving him that opportunity to shine. And it's part of that relentless mentality of just, we're all here for the same goal. You know, when we talk about in Five Dysfunctions, thematic goals and having a team with a common vision that everybody is working towards, Ted assumes that and just moves forward in a way that says, if you're part of Club Richmond, you must be here for Victory of Richmond. So I'm not even going to question your intentions. I assume everybody's intentions are good, and I'm going to plow forward with everybody's help and everybody on board because that's just who I am. And that's part of that relentless optimism. But it starts from a very real place of, we're all here for the same reason, and I'm just not going to question that in anybody. I'm going to move forward with it. And I think that's another one of those beautiful things that the show demonstrates, not just tells us in leadership, but shows us in leadership the power of a shared vision and a shared common goal and the idea that we're all on the same team and we're just going to operate that way, even if maybe it wasn't true for some of our characters at some of the times. He sort of plows through them by being relentlessly committed to the idea that, no, you know, I assume everybody's intentions are good, which is very cool stuff. All right, we are wrapping up towards the end of our hour, and I do like to keep these on schedule, so I will just make a last call for thoughts or comments. Any others that you just absolutely didn't want to let pass by? I said we could probably do 3 more hours on this if we really wanted to, because it is that good, but if there are any other big rocks we want to smash, I'll take them now.
I'm in grad school, and I feel like there could be a whole graduate course on this show.
I have no doubt that somewhere a OrgCom team is already putting together a whole semester on Ted Lasso. I did a whole semester on West Wing as a political science student, so anything's possible.
I think my biggest main takeaway from this, my bottom line, is it's important to care. Ted cares. That's the core of his motivation, his optimism, why he loves coaching. He just cares about his people, about the work that he's doing, but he just cares. It gets him out of bed every day. Whatever's in front of him, that's what's most important.
Couldn't be said better, Allie. I think that's exactly the message to take away from this whole thing. So with that, we're going to wrap up this episode of the Brew University Virtual Roundtable. Let me take a moment and thank my guests. Allie White, thank you so much for being here and being a part of this. And, you know, just be a goldfish about this whole experience if you want. You can just have done it. It's over. You survived your first podcast. Now just be a goldfish and put it out of your head and move on to bigger things.
It was not as scary as I thought it was going to be.
All right, good. Glad to hear it. And Zach, thank you as well for being here and joining us once again at the Brew University Roundtable. For a man who likes to be alone with his thoughts, you were definitely willing to share here today, and I appreciate that.
It was a pleasure, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it is my pleasure. I feel like I fell out of the lucky tree and hit every branch on the way down with you guys. So thank you all for joining us and being a part of it. Richmond for life, folks. Hashtag Richmond for life. If you haven't checked it out, watch Ted Lasso on Apple Streaming Plus, and then take away some really great leadership lessons because they are there to be had. Thank you for joining us, as always, here at the Brew University Virtual Roundtable. I've been your host, Jeff Weaver, and we'll be back again next time with you.